The Irish Times this morning makes for some harrowing reading. Chief reporter Carl O'Brien has talked to those with intellectual disabilities and their families about institutional abuse in homes set up to care for the mentally disabled. And Carl is with me now. Carl, good morning.
Good morning.
There's some pretty difficult stuff to read, particularly in the inside pages of your paper. The main page contains the bones of the story, if you like, but inside there are particular cases. Maybe you'd start off by telling me about the case of Brendan.
Yeah, Brendan is now in his early 60s. He's living in a residential centre in the Midlands. When he was a young boy, he was diagnosed as being mildly intellectually disabled. So he was sent off to a residential unit in Cork because he'd been falling behind at school. Very quickly, his behaviour really began to deteriorate. He became disruptive, developed behavioural problems. He tried to run away from the centre.
So happy-go-lucky at home, and then a short time into this kind of care, and he became a different person.
Yeah, he was a very happy young chap, according to his sisters who I spoke to. As I said, he tried attacking staff members. He was ultimately removed from there at 15 and was placed in a succession of largely inappropriate institutions, which really didn't meet his needs. At one point, he was in a psychiatric hospital for people with mental illnesses, not for people with intellectual disabilities. A few years ago, he was with his family watching television when the face of one of the perpetrators of abuse turned up in the television, and Brendan suddenly grew very agitated. It turned out, and he disclosed this over tentative conversations with the sisters, that that was the face of a person who had serially abused him at the residential centre when he was a young boy. In the course of following conversations, it also turned out that he'd been sexually assaulted at a day centre which he had attended in his later years. To his sisters, this was very dramatic because it accounted for the rapid deterioration of his behaviour, and this has been verified by psychiatrists who have since interviewed him.
The reason the image of the perpetrator was on the TV, was he being charged?
He had been charged for abuse of other people. But the big problem for his sisters was that when they sought to get justice for Brendan, that they went to the Gardaí, the Gardaí investigated, but ultimately the problem was to do with mental capacity. The Gardaí felt that they couldn't get a case before the DPP because of intellectual problems.
Now, you have a quotation, and if my listeners will forgive me for being slightly coarse, but in reading it, it gives us an idea of how he could articulate what happened to him. He said, "He did dirty things to me. He stuck his private parts up my bum. It was very sore. He did it to the others as well in the Spud House. If I wouldn't do it with him, he said he'd throw me in with the pigs."
It's harrowing stuff, and it was serial abuse over several years. And, you know, ultimately, all of this comes down to a major problem that we have with residential centres for people with intellectual disabilities, is that they are unregulated and uninspected. There's no independent inspections of any of these centres. There's no care standards. It's really a place apart. You know, we have nursing homes for older people which are subject to inspections. We have residential centres for children and care. But owing to the historical legacy of intellectually disabled people in these kinds of institutions, they've never really been opened to the kind of public scrutiny that they deserve.
All right, I'll come back to you on, if you like, the political responsibility for all of that in a moment. But we have Bridie Cox on the line as well. Bridie, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you worked as a nurse in the disability and mental health sector in the UK for 30 years, and then you returned to Ireland, to the Midwest, to work in an institution there. How did the services compare?
Well, for me, it was like travelling back in time. The practices that I saw, was unfolding before me as what I'd seen in the 60s, you know, in England. And there was patients queuing up for baths and shaves. You know, when I would find out that, you know, this was outmoded practice, I wasn't listened to. There was, you know, the elderly people would be queuing up for shaves, you know, outside the toilet, and there would be urine and, you know, a very smelly toilet. The same razor would be used for three or four residents, and the same towel would also be used for three or four residents.
And you had people queuing up naked while other people were being bathed?
Well, yes. In when the bathing times came, the patients would be waiting naked, sitting on the bed while somebody was being showered in the cubicle. And, this was, a sort of a practice that, nobody seemed to think was anything wrong with it. And, there was that lack of respect and dignity shown to these people, I couldn't really get over it,
And even simple things like money that they was theirs by right, they had to queue for that, they had to queue for cigarettes. And these are the small daily indignities. What about cruelty?
Yes, I also witnessed cruelty. When I first started in one of the units, it was on nights, so I didn't see a lot happening on nights. But when I came on to days, that's when I saw, especially an elderly man being physically abused by a male nurse. And he was regularly pushed and shoved around. He was caught a halter by the scruff of the neck and pushed through from one area into the next while being kicked up the backside. And that was very sorry. Now, if I go... Anytime I talk about that, I just break down. I'm sorry. So
that remark that is quoted, that he would say, if you don't straighten up, you won't fit in your coffin.
Yeah, the same particular male nurse used to say to another patient that if you don't straighten yourself up, you won't fit in the coffin. And he used to find this remark, the male nurse used to find it very, hilarious and find it very funny. This particular elderly gentleman would also be frightened in the presence of this male nurse. So that was the sort of practices that I witnessed in that particular unit. There was no individualized care plans. There was no therapeutic intervention, even though it was a rehabilitation unit. There was little or no, rehabilitation. There was no, as I said, no individualized care planning. And, I became de-skilled, and it was very frustrating.
All right. Now, did you complain?
Yes, I did complain. I complained to the particular male nurse that, his father would have been the same age as this particular gentleman that he was forever shouting at and kicking him and pushing him around, that his father would be the same age, but he just didn't take any notice. And I also complained to the female clinical nurse manager, and nothing was done. I was told that it was just teasing, and that it was nothing really serious. Yeah.
But you did take your complaints all the way.
And then I made my complaints known through the trusting care process, which of course is just the HSE investigating themselves, and. All my allegations that I made and complaints were deemed to be unfounded, which I was very distressed about, because it was like allowing people to continue with this bad practice. And I appealed to further on to the Consumers Affairs Office, and they also deemed that my complaints were unfounded. So my complaints at the minute are at the Ombudsman. So that's
now,
where I'm
you back. Worked in more than one institution. Was the second one as bad as the first, or was it better?
Well, it was equally as bad. I asked for a move to another area, and I worked on an elderly care ward. And, they also, the elderly care ladies, also queued up waiting for baths. There were three or four waiting outside the bathroom while there was two being given baths at the same time. And, I objected to this as well, and I said, this wasn't right, and I was told to go with the flow, and that, that everything was okay. The patient's clothes would be bundled up from the previous evening and placed in the bathroom. It was such, institutionalized practice that, I found it really very difficult to handle as well.
Brady, what was your conclusion about the attitude of staff? And obviously it was endemic right throughout the particular institutions, because they all seemed to take it for granted that this was normal behaviour towards the residents.
Yeah, well, I worked along with some very good nurses, but their hands were tied, because most of the actions were carried out by managers who, if the managers want to carry out such atrocities, where does the other staff understand, you know, and they were actually not giving out good messages to students and younger nurses that had just come out of the institution or out of the university. So it was, you know, they weren't really brought up to date with modern day psychiatric nursing. And I think that, you know, our governing body on board alternates should make sure that, you know, people are, you know, being given education in dealing with, you know, modern day psychiatry.
Yeah. They go to a university to get the best academic preparation, and then they go back into the Stone Age.
Well, the newer nurses coming out now with degrees are really highly qualified. But, you know, my concern would be that they're actually adopting some of the practices of the older nurses. And, you know, not all of them, I have to add, you know, but there are a few that, you know, would concern me that this is, they're carrying out the same practices as the older nurses.
And it would take a great character on the part of a young nurse to challenge the authority and the experience of older nurses who would be indoctrinating them into thinking this is the way.
Absolutely, absolutely. I remember when one male nurse retired and he had a sergeant major type approach to all his patients, and you know, he firmly believed that that was the approach that was right. And I recall hearing a newly qualified staff nurse saying, "We won't know what to do now when he leaves, because he really kept those patients under control." So, you know, this is the mentality of people, that, you know, it's control rather than providing therapeutic interventions. That's important, you know.
Well, Brady, I mean, what you say is interesting. You are one, I'm sure, of a few people who've decided to blow the whistle. But, Carl, how many complaints have there been? Your report suggests far too many.
Well, in the last 2.5 years, there's been literally hundreds of complaints, in excess of 500. They range across a broad spectrum. You would have issues such as communication with patients and their family, issues to do with medication, and then up at the more serious end of the scale, you'd have allegations of abuse, mistreatment, neglect. There's big concerns, like Bridie talked about, over the handling of these complaints. There's a real lack of transparency over what happens once what's known as a trust and care investigation begins, and the outcome. When you look through the official records, all it will say that an issue was dealt with within the appropriate specified period.
That's what they say.
That's the only outcome you see in most of these investigations. In other investigations, you might see a one-line report saying that the staff member was removed from contact with that patient. Now, does that mean that the staff member was just put into another section of the service where that person is in contact with other vulnerable people, or that they're removed from care duties or discipline?
I'm just utterly confused, because we've had the creation of HICWA over the last couple of years. Now, I thought their job was to go in and make sure this kind of thing simply does not happen in the 21st century. So,
Well, the problem is HICWA's remit only extends as far as nursing homes for older people, and as far as children's homes for children in care. As I was saying earlier, there's no inspection, there's no standards for the 8,000 people with intellectual disabilities.
So
in residential
how do they
care.
Justify excluding that sector from HICWA's remit?
Well, you know, this is something which has been talked about for the last decade. You've had groups like Inclusion Ireland, the main representative group for people with disabilities and their families. They've been calling for this for the last decade or more. The Ryan report underlined the clear vulnerability of people and the imbalance of power in these institutions. The only explanation we got from the government last year when this issue was brought before Cabinet was that there wasn't enough money to implement.
Right, well, as it happens, the Minister of State with responsibility for disability, John Maloney, is on the line now. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
This is a shocking situation.
It is, and I suppose the most shocking belief might be the fact that you might believe that little has been done about it. And I would like to try to assure you and your listeners that the government is moving to deal with the first commitment has always been that all residential institutions would have statutory inspections. That's where we're going to.
Yeah, so why hasn't it happened?
Well, I'm not going to dress it up. I'm going to accept exactly everything that Carol has said, but I'd ask you also to look into the fast-track record and to refer, I suppose, first of all, to the 1993 Nursing Home Act, where we began the statutory inspections back as far as then in that particular area.
Hang on a second. There's a very simple thing you could do today, which wouldn't cost you a lot of money. You have civil servants who may or may not be working to rule, but they could draw up a code of practice, make it statutory, bring it through the door and make it statutory. Now, you may not be able to get the numbers of inspections up to speed very quickly, but even the threat for all those institutions around the country that HICWA might swoop down on them tomorrow might get them to get their act together.
Well, that creates the impression, Pat, we're sitting over here doing nothing about that. Let me just make
it very simple.
Yeah, very simply, we have to refer again to the outcome of the Ryan Commission report and the implementation plan. That came out in July 2009, again, where we came in to commit ourselves to providing the inspection funding for children's residential care. We were, I want to give credit to the officials in this department. They also recognised that particular point. It was now most important to bring forward proposals for government to deal with the 8,000 adults in residential care. And that's where we are. And whilst I said the comment last night it was soon, obviously I should be more specific, before the end of March. And you don't just put together proposals because the Pat Kenny Show is coming on this morning. This is something been out for the last
number
of months.
Well, I can't take credit for running this one. This is Carl O'Brien's story.
Well, of course, I know, Carl. I give Carl, I don't mean it in that context. I'd like to try to assure you this is not a political response because the heat is on us. This is something we've been working at since last July.
Carl, what do you say to that?
Well, I hope, there's been many promises in the past that this would be implemented. I can remember 5 years ago this went to the Department of Health and there was commitments then that this would be acted on. Unfortunately, it hasn't. And we're not talking about much money. You know, privately, officials would estimate it might take between 5 million and 10 million to get this fully up and running. And it's not even a matter necessarily of readying legislation. The entire framework is ready to roll. HICWA has drawn it up. The care standards are drafted. It's ready to be implemented.
It's ready to roll.
Just to put into context, the 5 million, the organisations which provide care for people with disabilities received £1.5 billion pounds or euros last year. So we're talking, maybe 0.5%. It's interesting that when the financial issues arose over the introduction of independent inspections for nursing homes, the answer was there was no money, but the political commitment was such that they levied charges on nursing homes to introduce this. So there's lots of ways around this to implement this.
If I could just respond, and I have to accept again what Carol has highlighted, but could I just go back to make a point? And I heard Deirdre Carroll from Inclusion Ireland in respect to her points of view. At a public conference of Inclusion in Monaghan last year, I did accept questions from the floor. It was posed to me that I should be putting into funding for the inspections of children's homes. At that point, I said, no, we couldn't do that. Government came back and responded it would do that. We're now seeing the fallout from the Ryan report, and we're dealing with it. Could I make this point, though? Of the $1.5 billion we talk about, I began a review of the funding for disabilities last year. That will come to government this year. I'm talking strategically and properly moving to how we properly fund the service. I'm talking about individualised payments, I'm talking about fostering, but I'm also talking about looking at the whole context of the congregated settings to see how we can deliver properly, and this will also incorporate standards.
I'm thinking, listening to the stories we've heard of some old man being booted up the bum this morning by someone in some home around the country, and I want that to stop today.
Yes, and I have to jump in to say this to you. None of us will be satisfied with us inspecting ourselves, that's the first thing. And when I spoke about the non-statutory inspections, I wasn't just talking simply of ourselves in the department or HSE kind of the inspections. I was thinking in terms of people like, say, Michael's House, who would have a predominantly and huge involvement in the care of people with disabilities kind of such inspections. But I do believe the game has moved on far further than that. And that is why, and can I also make the point, that Taoiseach himself had intervened to ensure that we bring before Cabinet as quickly as we possibly can our proposals. And that we're doing, and they'll be with government before end of March.
Well, end of March, we will certainly keep an eye on that particular thing, and I'm sure Carl will be doing that in the Irish Times. Finally, Carl, I should ask you, we talked about Brendan at the beginning. Is Brendan in a good place now?
He is in a good place. Really, thanks to very strong lobbying and relentless lobbying by his sisters. He's in a community home with about four or five other people. Those kinds of settings are the future for care. You know, if we're looking towards what kind of standards we want for people with intellectual disabilities, they need to be living in the community among us. They need to have access to the same kind of life, the same choices that we have in the community. Institutional care and the regimental nature of institutional care is something which has been phased out in most modern Western countries. It really should be time that we do the same.
Just some of the text coming in. This abuse goes on for people with physical disabilities in residential care and in nursing homes, as well as no inspection. There's little independent advocacy to help people to speak up. That's from Suzanne in Dublin. Please thank that lady, that's Bridie, for her courage, tenacity and refusal to be silenced. These are the heroes who change things, so says Paula. Some of that evil abuse of helpless intellectually disabled is clearly aggravated rape, says another. Farms are inspected on a very regular basis. Why not residential homes? It's a disgrace. And another one, nothing has changed. My friend works in an old folks' home. They were tipped off about a, quote, surprise inspection days before, and they had a big show ready. And that's always one of the things that happens in these situations. It should not, but it does. Anyway, Carl, thank you very much for joining us. Bridie, thank you. And Minister, thank you.